Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to Circle Sanctuary Network Podcasts, brought to you by Circle Sanctuary, one of the oldest nature spirituality churches in the United States, connecting people of nature-centered paths around the world. Join us through the week for a variety of shows discussing various topics, celebrating the divine in all of its forms through nature worship, rituals, education, and building bridges of community.
Hello, and welcome to Blue Marble Podcast, a program of the Circle Sanctuary Network podcast, CSNP. I'm your host, Reverend Charlotte Bearer, Circle Sanctuary Minister and facilitator of the Green Faith Circle Ministry here at Circle Sanctuary that is committed to education about the climate crisis, climate justice, and eco-activism today. In 1972, the last Apollo mission took a photograph of the Earth that showed the big picture of our water-based planet. This image was named the Blue Marble. And it was the very first time humankind had seen such a photo of our planet home as a whole. This photo has become the iconic image for the Earth Day movement and the environmental movement since then. In 2022, the so-called climate justice movement is now the overarching environmental and social justice movement combined that is fighting for the planet and for the systemic, social, and economic changes needed now to transform the crisis we're facing. Blue Marble podcasts look at the many different aspects of this global movement with guests who help us to understand what is happening and what we can do about it within our spheres of influence. My two special guests today are Reverend Selena Fox and Reverend Dennis Carpenter. Selena Fox is Executive Director of Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve, a 200-acre nature sanctuary in the Driftless bioregion of southwestern Wisconsin, USA. Also known as Reverend Selena Fox, Selena is Senior Minister of Circle Sanctuary, which is an international nature spirituality church serving pagans, Wiccans, Druids, pagans in all varieties, and other nature religion practitioners across the USA and around the world. An eco-activist for more than 50 years, Selena was among the organizers of events for the very first Earth Day on April 22, 1970, and is founder and director of Circle Cemetery, one of the first green cemeteries in North America. Selena writes and speaks on nature communion, celebrating the seasons, herbology, greening life's end, and nature religions. And she hosts two weekly podcasts, Nature Mystic and Nature Spirituality. Dr. Dennis D. Carpenter, also Reverend Dennis, is Professor Emeritus of Psychology, and he's a Circle Sanctuary minister as well. He assists with administration of Circle Sanctuary, its nature preserve, and green cemetery in southwestern Wisconsin, USA. He lives on land adjacent to Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve with his wife, who is Reverend Selena Fox. And he is author of the book Spiritual Experiences, Life Changes and Ecological Viewpoints of Contemporary Pagans, among other works. He guides contemplative nature walks and presents workshops on eco-psychology and nature spirituality that emphasize the health and wellness benefits of experience in nature, as well as the potential of such experiences to strengthen ecological activism work. Thank you so much for joining me on Blue Marble Podcast today. May I call you Selena and Dennis?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you. I want our audience to know, our audience includes people who are Circle Sanctuary members and friends, but also beyond for people who may not be familiar with Circle Sanctuary. We are airing this Blue Marble podcast just a few days ahead of Earth Day 2022. And I am so aware of how much both of you have done over the decades to fight the good fight for the protection of our planet home and also for religious freedom and social justice. Today, we're going to be focusing this interview on your earth activism as part of your nature-based spiritual practice, as well as part of your legacy as postmodern pagan spiritual leaders. So it's great to have you. I want to kick off my first question, and I'd like to open with you, Selena, if you would kindly share with us, you know, when was the very first time you became aware of the need to even engage eco-activism?
I grew up in Northern Virginia in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. And in the 1950s, my parents, as I was a young girl, were doing gardening, but it was organic gardening. So throughout my life, I have had direction from family members as well as people I've interacted with that have really encouraged me to be aware of environment. And so as a young girl, I learned about growing vegetables in a garden without chemicals in an organic way. And as I started entering the workforce in the 1960s, I got a job in the summer working for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, U.S. Forest Service. And I became very aware of forest environments and the need to protect forests. In fact, I answered Smokey the Bear's fan mail and sent information to people who wanted to learn about forests, forest rangers. And as part of my work, working with Forest Service, I became very familiar with campaigns involving Smokey the Bear or Smokey Bear. Mm-hmm. Only you can prevent forest fires. And being able to be part of an effort to really protect forests was very much part of my journey as a young adult, teenager becoming a young adult. Mm-hmm. When Senator Gaylord Nelson put out the call to do teach-ins in 1970, I was at the campus of the College of William and Mary in Williamsburg, Virginia, and responded to that call and was one of the organizers of the Earth Day event in 1970. I've continued to be involved in eco-activism ever since.
Wonderful. What wonderful beginnings. And I resonate with the very first Earth Day poster I did was a screened poster of an organic garden. When you say that. So Dennis, how about yourself? When was the first time you became aware of the need to engage eco-activism?
So I grew up on a farm in southwestern Wisconsin back in the 1950s and 1960s into the early 70s. And it's growing up in nature like that, I think, played a big role in establishing my valuing of nature. But you know, it was the 1960s and traditional agriculture was what was the common in southwestern Wisconsin. So I didn't take any particular messages from that experience regarding eco-activism. I do have somewhere in my keepsake archives a paper I wrote back in high school where I lamented about the fact that I thought in the future it was a potential problem that the earth would become covered with concrete. And I think that was anticipate the exploitation of nature, and I continue to be shocked when I see subdevelopments going up where nature should be that sort of thing. But I think it was really in the early 80s when I became involved in paganism and ultimately moved to Circle Sanctuary and became there where eco-activism became much more of front and center in my awareness and work. In the late 80s and early 90s, I was working on my doctoral dissertation through Saybrook Institute, which at that time was located in San Francisco and now is known as Staybrook University. And I did my dissertation, and you mentioned that title to begin with, Spiritual Experiences, Life Changes, and Ecological Viewpoints of Contemporary Pagans. And that was where, you know, the motivation for that, I think, was to look a bit more at the pagan worldview and views about the environment and attitudes about eco-activism, that sort of thing. So it was pretty active back in that time period. Since then, in the 90s and throughout the last couple of decades, I've done workshops on climate change, denial, links between spiritual worldview and ecological activism, those kinds of topics. So, you know, it's been over a course of a lifetime, a gradual kind of emerging.
Right. And I'm resonating with that time frame you're speaking about, the late 80s into early 90s. You know, myself, one of the first, I think, eco-activism things I was really a part of, direct action, was being chained to the redwood, the stumps of redwood trees in Mendocino, California, stopping Georgia Pacific from trying to raise the last stand of redwoods on the coast there. And I started to really encounter more deeply neo-pagan or contemporary pagan worldviews too that were a part of that. So you folks have gone on to start a church, which is, you know, the largest, most established nature-based religion church in North America. It's an international eco-spirituality center. Right up front and center, you state in the vision and mission is a commitment to protecting the planet. And in essence, inviting, engaging, eco-education, eco-activism. Why is eco-activism so prominent for you and for Circle Sanctuary?
I think it really stems from the fact that as I became more environmentally active, birthday, but in a variety of different ways, I was also discovering contemporary paganism and nature religion. And one of the things that I saw as complementary was that as one turned towards old forms of nature religion in contemporary ways, there was this resonance with the divine in nature. And it seemed very important that as Circle Sanctuary started coming into being, that we not only honor nature in some old and new ways, but that we make certain that we be part of the solutions and not the pollutions that were going on. I helped birth Circle Sanctuary back in 1974. So there was only a few years after Earth Day first started. And in the 1970s, there was a strong awareness and legislation in the USA to protect the water, Clean Water Act, and to protect the air and protect endangered species. When you're part of a form of spirituality that not only recognizes our interconnectedness with other humans, but that larger natural world, it's really important that we walk the talk of being not only in good relation with other humans, but the whole biosphere. So at a very foundational moment in Etzawin in 1974, when the name Circle and the logo of the 12 circles around a central circle in Circle came to me, part of that initial vision was to have a center, a church, and ultimately a place where we'd be grounded and working from that was resonating with nature in a holistic way and in a responsible way. So pretty much our vision and mission, as they've evolved over the years, began as Circle began.
Thank you, Selena. Dennis, you as well. Why is eco-activism so prominent for you and for Circle Sanctuary?
It's prominent because it's so central to the spiritual worldview of contemporary pagans, including ourselves, is that the divine is imminent within all of nature. All of nature is sacred. The earth is our mother. Our bodies are of the earth. You know, we come from the earth. We return to the earth. So this profound sense of interconnectedness with the rest of the natural world, I think, positions paganism in a general kind of way, and our work specifically, to value nature and to promote eco-activism.
Thank you. So I'm kind of jump ahead and then I'll loop back again, but jumping off of what you just said, you know, some people in our listening audience may not understand paganism or postmodern paganism, or they may think of it as Wicca only or as something, unfortunately, if they're truly not exposed, they might think of it as something to do with Antichrist or Satanism, which of course it does not. It's not at all a Christian construct, but it's so far beyond Wicca in its diversity. And you're kind of alluding to a pagan DNA as I'm hearing it, you know, a baseline, a core value that runs throughout all of the manifestations of paganism today. And why would that be demanding that we not just revere the earth and the interconnectedness of the web of life as sacred, but that we actively protect the planet, really protect the planet? Selena, I'm going to throw that back to you.
I think it's really important to look at some core principles that have been part of nature religion all along. The idea that we are interconnected and we are part of the larger world actually has its roots back in ancient pagan times. One of the core principles of the form of paganism as is practiced in the Circle Sanctuary community is working with the elements of nature, earth, air, fire, water, spirit. And each of those elements, which take the form symbolically of forming a star, a five-pointed star. Yes, some Wiccan traditions work with the pinnacle, but it's also widely used amongst people who are pagan. The earth is the soil, the rocks of nature, and in our lives, it's the physical realm. The air is the wind, the air that we breathe, and in human life, it's our thoughts. The fire is sun and energy, the lightning flash, the life force that brings growth to living things. And in human life, it's our will, it's our stamina, it's our energy. The water and waters in nature, salt waters, the oceans and seas, the fresh waters, springs and streams and rivers and ponds, lakes, and precipitation and the waters where salt and fresh come together. In nature, it is connecting with waters in the many ways they form. And in human life, it's our emotions, it's our feelings. And with spirit, it's the interconnecting force, source, that not only links us with other humans, but the greater web of life of which we are all part. and the circle around the five-pointed star, each of the points of the pentacle representing one of the elements, is that greater community of life that we are part of here on planet Earth, but also in the larger realm of nature, capital N nature, of the cosmos. So some very old ways of conceptualizing life in the universe are being worked with pagans today across a variety of different traditions and paths. And one of the things that I find is important in eco-activism work is to relate to those elements, not just as concepts, but as living forces that we can commune with, can learn from, can attune to. So as I do some eco-education and eco-activism, I actually draw from some very ancient pagan principles in a new way. Let us clean up the soil, the earth. Let us clean up the air, the air. Let's clean up the waters, the water. And let us shift to clean energy, the fire. And let us collaborate and be part of a healing force on the planet, not only with other humans, but with all the dimensions of the natural world. So for me, taking old concepts of paganism and working with them in contemporary context fits well with eco-activism. Listening to nature, I think, is essential. Being able to not only honor Mother Earth or the Earth Spirit or Father Earth, but to attune to and listen to and to be able to work in harmony as part of our spiritual practice to bring about greater solutions instead of the pollutions.
No, that's a wonderful thing right there, because what I'm really hearing you talk about is as we're taking care of all these elements with the earth, we're also taking care of ourselves because of the interrelatedness between that individually and collectively. There's a lot more to say there, but I also want to ask Dennis if you have a couple of more guiding principles there that you would add to this as a part of the pagan DNA in doing eco-activism or approaching this work?
Yes, I do. I'd like to start by saying that many of these ideas are common within contemporary paganism, but I want to be clear that these kinds of ideas are not necessarily unique to contemporary paganism, that these kinds of ideas would likely be shared by people coming from a Buddhist or a Hindu, even a Christian or other types of religious kinds of backgrounds these days, as well as environmentalists in general who may be not religious at all. And I think a basic principle, you know, if we look back into environmentalism a bit, Aldo Leopold was a natural resources professor and environmentalist in Wisconsin in the early to middle part of the 20th century. And in 1949, he wrote, "We abuse land because we regard it as a commodity belonging to us."
Mm-hmm.
When we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that quote summarizes pretty well, I think, why this eco-activism idea is so much in the DNA of contemporary paganism. In fact, there's been a a lot of research done on these kinds of ideas in a broader context than contemporary paganism. And there's actually a construct that's referred to as human nature connectedness.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been studied in the last few decades quite a bit. And it's basically it has to do with the extent to which humans see themselves as part of nature. And the research clearly suggests that when humans see themselves as an interconnected part of nature, they are much more likely to be concerned about the environment and to work on behalf of the environment because they see themselves as such an integral part of the environment. So perhaps there's some self-preservation interests at work there. If we're protecting the environment, we're protecting ourselves. But I think it's bigger than that, in that we understand and recognize the sacredness and importance of all of nature and the value in protecting it.
Thank you. I'm thinking of Bill Plotkin and some of his work with Animus Institute and reframing the egocentric worldview into an ecocentric worldview, and how that can be featured a lot in nature-based religion. Getting back to Circle, I want to allow you to please share with us some of the ways in which Circle Sanctuary as a leader in this work has really been involved with Earth Day and with eco-justice activism over the years. Selena, would you like to give us your summary of some of that, and then I'll ask Dennis to add to that.
No, thank you. Certainly, as Circle took form back in 1974, part of the way that we were connecting environmentally was with our ceremonies, celebrating the cycles of the season, the beginnings and the midpoints of the four seasons, the equinoxes and solstices, and the what are known as the Celtic fire festivals, the midpoints of each season, the cycles of the moon, the new moon, the waxing moon, full moon, waning moon, and the cycles of life, not only human life, but it is seen within plants and creatures, within ecosystems. So doing teachings about our connections with other forms of life on planet Earth, as well as us being part of the larger cosmos, was very present in the early days. And we knew that we needed to eventually settle at some type of location where people could celebrate these turnings of the wheel of the year, the sun and the season holidays, and the lunar holidays, and the life holidays, as well as communing with nature. We really wanted to have a center where people could readily go out into a natural place and be able to do practice on their own and with others. So early on, we started looking for land that would be our home for Circle Sanctuary. And in 1983, we found that place, Circle Sanctuary Nature Preserve. We're located just west of Madison, Wisconsin, about a 45-minute drive from the center part of the city. And one of the wonderful things about the land where we have our spiritual home is the different ecosystems that are here. We have wetlands. We have a remnant prairie that dates back before European settlers came to the area. We have wonderful forests. They're mostly hardwood forests. Most of the land is forest. And we have, since getting to the land, not only done ceremonial activities, but we've been actively engaged in working with the land, taking our messages from the land and having those environmental scientists who are part of our community guide us in developing a strategic plan for the land regarding ecological restoration. So yes, we are removing invasive species. We've done wetlands preservation. We've done prairie restoration. We're working to do reforestation, as well as we have learn to be aware of the plants and the creatures that also make their home here. So part of the work that we do is being aware and studying and doing some research here. We've partnered with some scientific institutions and projects, for example, looking at the eastern bluebird and ways of helping to bring that back by providing habitat and doing some studies with that. We partnered with U.S. Department of Agriculture and doing some research regarding the gypsy moth problem. We have had science experiments and research projects here. We know that we have 8 different species of bats that make Circle Sanctuary home. So we've done some science, but we also think it's really important for people as part of their eco-education to be directly involved in ecological restoration and other work. In addition, we have done nature communion experiences, and Dennis and I have begun jointly leading experiences where people have a chance to deepen their understanding of their connection with nature. It's part therapeutic, but it's a win-win. It's good for the humans getting into the green space, and it's good for the land and the planet as a whole to have more humans aware. We have done quite a bit of work on Earth Day with not only having some workshops about different aspects of the environment, but getting people involved in tree planting and prairie restoration work. And we always do a ceremony in which we connect with each other and honor our connections with biodiversity and planet Earth, our home. Those are just some of the things that we have been doing over the years. Earth Day is one of those occasions where we have brought together direct action, care for land, and nature communion, and have partnered with others doing Earth Day events, not only in the region, but around the world.
So there in your answer, I'm hearing what you were speaking to, Dennis, is giving people an opportunity to really perhaps do a deeper dive into feeling a part of the natural community, feel a part of nature rather than a part from it. And I had one of my mentors always said that when people come to love something, they will want to protect it and cherish it. Are there things you would want to add to what Selena was just sharing about how Circle Sanctuary has been involved in eco-justice activism over the years?
Well, I think Selena did a very comprehensive job of describing the ecological work that we actually do here at Circle Sanctuary. So I think I'd like to jump off the point that you just made, Shar, and that weaves together some of what we've already said, and that is this idea that, you know, we provide a safe place for people to come and connect with nature. And paganism in its variety of spiritual practices tends to be a very experiential type of of religion, meaning that we get people involved in ritual, in ceremony, and in connecting with nature. And there's a you know, when I did my dissertation on paganism back in the early 90s, you know, not surprisingly, pagans had tended to hold very pro-ecological types of attitudes. But people, pagans who reported having spiritual or mystical experiences in natural settings were even more likely to demonstrate strong ecological viewpoints. And there's a fairly interesting body of research that's emerged in the last couple decades since then, that those individuals who do have these spiritual, mystical types of experiences in natural settings do tend to have much more pro-ecological viewpoints and are much more likely to engage in eco-activism. So that's an important part of our work, is facilitating those types of experiences for people.
Wow, that's really interesting, because I, as a young child, had very powerful mystical experiences in nature. Nature has always been my primary church, and I have a very strong commitment to eco-activism. So I guess I'm a case study for that. That makes me giggle. But I'm also appreciating what you're saying, because the systematic theology of so many so-called pagan traditions or nature-based traditions, there's not a clear academy. It's not a religion of the book as much as it is an experiential a process of growing a connection to the divine, to the sacred in nature. I don't want to digress away from climate activism, but you know, I also know that one of the things you do as part of a green cemetery is work with the greening at the end of life. And that's an unusual offering, because cemeteries, the so-called property, the way we care for our beloved dead, you know, that's a whole area that has bearing on the climate movement as well. Do you want to say something, Selena, about the work you do with greening at the end of life?
Yes. That was part of our plan early on, once we could find land to be our headquarters, to make sure that there was a place on the land where human remains could be returned back to nature. Many people are aware of the importance of greening life, of living our life more sustainably.
Mm-hmm.
When we die, it's important to take a look at environmental responsibility, what happens to our body, and instead of putting toxic chemicals into the body for embalming, which too often is the case, and getting a lot of materials into the ground, concrete vaults, fiberglass vaults, steel caskets, and that type of thing, to really take an old look in a new way regarding end of life. So I see that Circle Cemetery, which is one of the first green cemeteries in North America, has not only provided an opportunity for people to green the end of their life, but we've become a model for others who are seeking to have green cemeteries in their area. It doesn't make sense that if you've been trying to do organic gardening and eat foods without chemicals in it, why do you want to put preservation toxic chemicals into your body and then put that into the earth? So we give people choice with our green cemetery. Some people do full body burial. So the body is not embalmed, and it's put in a biodegradable container and returned to the earth, or cremation, which is, yes, it does take some fuel to cremate bodies. However, some people actually prefer the cremation piece because ashes can be scattered and not actually take up any earth space at all. So we have an area of our cemetery that's cremains only, and we have our restored prairie for people that want their cremains to nurture a prairie. And we have the burying ground where people have full body burials of their loved ones. And the fourth part of our cemetery is our microlithic stone circle, where we do some of our end of life passage ceremonial work. We teach people about greeting the end of life, as well as run Circle Cemetery.
Thank you for that. You know, I have, as a healthcare chaplain, I work with advanced care planning with people all the time. And I have in my own advanced care directive about my wishes, definitely that I want to have a greening end of life. And I've specified what that is. I love your point. If you've spent all your living days trying your best to honor the biodiversity, the interconnectedness of life, to have a not harmful footprint on the earth, why then help add to the forever chemicals in the ground as you're going out the door, right? So it's a really important thing for people to consider. I'm respecting time, so I'm going to shift a little bit away from, we've been talking about acts of conservation, about sort of regeneration, restoration. The climate movement today is so urgent. The stakes are so high. And we talk, often people of faith or faith leaders can struggle with speaking truth to power. We're aligned with Green Faith International, which is calling people of faith and faith leaders out to speak truth to power about the climate crisis today and about the need for climate justice. Climate justice is respecting that not all groups of people are treated equally in either having to bear the impacts of climate, the climate crisis, or in finding solutions going forward. So I'd like to give you a chance to maybe comment on how climate justice activism is such an important part of the work that we need to be doing and respecting through Circle Sanctuary as well.
Well, one of the things that in 2022 we are involved with is a special project. It's statewide. It's called March 4th to Earth Day. It is a series of rallies and demonstrations every Friday at noon and at 5 p.m. at different areas around Wisconsin. And there's more than a dozen different communities where these events have been happening, and more are being added. In addition to working to build public awareness about climate change and the need for humans to take action, there's a very specific component to this, which is eco-justice. Too often, those who are impacted the most by climate change are the people that are contributing the least to it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And we are involved in an effort with March 4th, the Earth Day, to partner with a variety of different communities, people of different beliefs, spiritualities, religions, as well as free thinkers, and be in partnership and allyship with Native Americans in Wisconsin, and in particular, the Bad River Band of the Lake Superior, Chippewa or Ojibwa. And a Line 5, as it's known, is carrying tar sands oil, and a company named Enbridge is attempting to get it to to be rerouted through Indian reservations. So as part of this project, we are actively working with Native peoples of the different tribes and nations that are in the state, as well as tying into a much larger eco-justice endeavor. So I actually created a chant that we used for the very first Madison, Wisconsin rally a few weeks ago. March 4th, the Earth Day, stop line 5 in every way. And I give this as an example of one of the partnerships that Circle Sanctuary has been doing as part of eco-justice work. We also have been active in the Parliament of the World's Religions, an international interreligious institution that came into being in 1893 and then reemerged in 1993. There is an eco-justice international interreligious component to the work of the Parliament of the World's Religions. And as I have gone and spoken at these events, I have had the opportunity to be able to talk directly with Indigenous people who are being impacted by climate change and hearing firsthand. In 2018, Dennis and I were at the Parliament speaking there, and we were at a session where we had the opportunity to talk with one of the leaders of one of the tribes in the Amazon who was there with an interpreter. It was really powerful to be able to talk about our common love of forests. Yes, he's saving rainforests. We're saving forests in a more moderate climate zone, hardwood forests and other forests, but to actually be able to forge alliances to bring about some change has been really important.
Mm-hmm. Dennis, do you have anything to add about climate justice in particular?
Well, I think that it's a big complicated problem, and I think a lot of folks probably are in a position of, hey, this is just too big of a problem for me to wrap my head around, or, you know, it's we hear about the urgency of it all. And so I think many people probably struggle with keeping hope alive and that sort of thing. So I think that, you know, pagans are in great positions because of their views of the environment and the relationship with the environment, that I'm hoping in the immediate near term and beyond that they can be louder spokespersons on behalf of activism and eco-justice.
Well, and that's, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, when Dennis and I spoke on eco-psychology and eco-spirituality at the Parliament of the World's Religions back in Toronto in 2018, we got questions, pretty much what Dennis was talking about, people talking about kind of the vastness of it all and wanting to know, well, how to proceed. And these were people from a variety of different spiritual, religious, and philosophical backgrounds. And, you know, I remember saying, well, it's really important to keep yourself informed, but pick something. Pick a particular thing, learn about it, communicate about it, make a difference in at least one area, and make sure that you take time out to go and commune with nature to help nurture yourself so that you are able to sustain sustain work for environmental activism. And I think it's really important that we have conversations and share information, but we also need to get other people involved. And conferences are good, but we need to do follow-up And I really appreciate the opportunity for us to talk about these things in this podcast, because we can discuss problems and be aware of problems. That's a good first step. But we really need to start translating that into something that we can do. And we need to reach out and partner with others and recognize we can collaborate and get some positive change happening. In Wisconsin, we had Native American burial sites threatened, and we were part of an effort, not only working with people in our community, different paths of paganism, but we were able to work together to preserve the mounds that were in danger of being destroyed by somebody who wanted to mine the land instead of preserving that.
Well, you've raised several instances or illustrations of how Circle Sanctuary right there in the Wisconsin area, and you too have been involved in messaging, being climate communicators, climate justice activists. And of course, you have a whole network of members and ministers who are partnering with Climate Reality, with Green Faith International, with Bioneers, with all kinds of environmental organizations. And what I'm hearing as an overarching theme is getting involved on the local level, showing up, speaking up, bringing what you love to do, bringing it to the game, partnering with somebody, and really, getting involved, doing something. And this is this eco sort of putting boots on the ground or putting hands and feet to the work is an integral part of one's spiritual practice as a pagan. And of course, we have here at Circle Sanctuary this Green Faith Ministry launched because through the Zoom meetings, we want to give people an opportunity to come together, talk about the work they're doing, talk about what we need to know on a more global level to take back to our respective communities and our spheres of influence. We have these podcasts to help with the communication effort, and we have ongoing ways of really leveraging our faith community to be actively involved in the climate movement, as we've described. We're coming up against time here, but I don't want to rob you of an opportunity to have a last word. And then what I'd love to ask you on closing is, what do you say to somebody who says, well, activism should stay out of the church? That, I mean, spiritual community is not where I want to go to be promoting activism. What might your response be to them?
There is no planet B.
Done. Boom. Right. Dennis?
And I think I would add, this is central to who we are and what we do. So if this is a problem for you, time to find another church.
That I have to say, is what I wish I could hear every single faith leader say. Having that kind of conviction and that kind of stance. The people who were on the podcast prior to this one were talking about a regenerative era, saying this is a scary time to be alive, but an exciting time. It's a civilization game changer. And what is potential is a regenerative era coming. And for me, as a pagan minister, a postmodern pagan minister, I think about how do I want to work hope by making a choice to live into the regenerative era? Where is it happening? How do I join up with it? And this is the work. This is the work we're doing now, no matter who we are or how we do it. This is the essential work. What do you think about that?
I agree. And I'd like to just conclude with something I wrote many years ago, and it's part of a longer piece. I am pagan. I am pagan. I am a part of the whole of nature, the rocks, the animals, the plants, the elements, and stars are my relatives. Other humans are my sisters and brothers. whatever their races, colors, genders, sexual orientations, ages, nationalities, religions, lifestyles. Planet Earth is my home. I am a part of this large family of nature, not the master of it. I have my own special part to play, and I seek to discover and play that part to the best of my ability. I seek to live in harmony with others and in the family of nature, treating others with respect. I am pagan. Nature spirituality is my religion and my life's foundation. Nature is my spiritual teacher and holy book. I am part of nature, and nature is part of me. My understanding of nature's inner mysteries grows as I journey on this spiritual path.
Thank you. Dennis, do you have anything to add to that?
I think I would add to that using a phrase that we often conclude ceremonies or meditations with, and that would be, so mote it be.
So mote it be. Thank you, both of you, so much for being here with us today on this Blue Marble podcast. Thank you to our audience for listening to another installment of Blue Marble podcast. It's been wonderful having our special guests here today, Reverend Selena Fox and Dennis Carpenter. Blue Marble podcast airs on the third Friday of every month at 5 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Central, and 8 p.m. Eastern times. After it airs live, there remains a recording of this podcast, which is accessible through the Circle Sanctuary website. So one can always go to circlesanctuary.org, look under Our Work, click on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, and scroll down to Blue Marble episodes for listening anytime. I want to thank our producers, Reverends Jeanette and David Ewing. Once again, I'm your host, Reverend Charlotte Baer, urging all of you to share this information forward. Blessed be.
Earth, my body, water, my blood, air, my breath, and fire, my spirit.
Thank you for joining us on the Circle Sanctuary Network podcasts, presented by Circle Sanctuary and produced for all who follow the Nature Center paths. Join us here throughout the week for various programming connecting the community around the world. And please don't forget to watch for updates on the Circle Sanctuary website at www.circlesanctuary.org. And follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/CSNpodcasts. We can also be found on your favorite podcast hosting sites, such as iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, and others. And until next time, many blessings.